Coming up on Simply Superior.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
As a tribal leader said to me, you know, Representative Stauber just poked a bear.
Did a local congressman's support for mining unnecessarily provoke more than 500 Native American tribes?
He awakened Indian country, and Indian country is very, very ticked off.
Or was he just taking a stand against identity politics? Plus, 2020 is history, and local performers mark this moment in time.
I used to crave the world's attention. I think I cried too
many
times.
Plus the regional news and review after this.
I just need some more affection. Anything to get me by. 100 million stories and 100 million songs. I feel stupid when I sing.
Superior news and issues from a superior point of view.
As a tribal leader said to me, you know, Representative Stauber just poked a bear.
Did a local congressman's support for mining unnecessarily provoke more than 500 Native American tribes?
He awakened Indian country, and Indian country is very, very ticked off.
Or was he just taking a stand against identity politics? Plus, 2020 is history, and local performers mark this moment in time.
I used to crave the world's attention. I think I cried too many times.
Also, the regional news and review coming up. Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. Joe Biden has been sworn in as President of the United States, and one of the first orders of business for Congress, the Senate specifically, is confirmation of his cabinet picks. His choice for Interior Secretary has made history. If confirmed, Democratic Congresswoman Deb Haaland of New Mexico, an enrolled member in the Laguna Pueblo Nation, would become the first Native American cabinet member in U.S. history. That nomination got added attention locally, however, with the revelation last week that Minnesota 8th District Republican Congressman Pete Stauber wrote a letter addressed to colleagues against her nomination, saying she was for the Green New Deal and against the interests of our area's mining concerns. In response, all 574 of the nation's federally recognized tribes denounced Stauber's action, in particular for not speaking beforehand with the five tribal governments in his district. We made several requests for Stauber to appear on this program, but as of our deadline yesterday, his staff has not yet responded. We do have with us, however, Tad Johnson, Senior Director of American Indian Tribal Nation Relations, and I'll let him describe that a little bit more, at the University of Minnesota. He's also an enrolled member in the Boyce Fort Band of Minnesota Chippewa, and he's been a tribal attorney for more than 20 years, as well as a tribal court judge and tribal administrator. He's been counsel to the Subcommittee on Native American Affairs for the U.S. House of Representatives and joins us from his home in Duluth. Welcome to Simply Superior, Tad Johnson.
Thank you for having me on, Robin.
We're also joined by Emma Dumain, a reporter covering Congress for E&E News, with the E and E standing for Energy and Environment. She's covered Capitol Hill since 2010, previously as a congressional correspondent for McClatchy, and she's also worked for Roll Call and Congressional Quarterly. She joins us from Washington. Welcome to Simply Superior, Emma.
Thanks for having me on.
So, Emma, I'll start with you. You wrote a piece in mid-December before the controversy with Stauber's letter heated up about Biden's pick of Deb Haaland and what to expect regarding her confirmation. So, first, how is the process supposed to go, and what were the roadblocks you saw then, or just the challenges of the nomination?
Yeah, so first of all, it's important to recognize that while everybody has an opinion about everything in Washington and on Capitol Hill, the only people who actually have a say over whether Congresswoman Haaland gets confirmed to the Interior Secretary position are the senators. So you have, at this point, you have 50 Democrats and 50 Republicans. Despite the 50-50 split, you have new Vice President Kamala Harris as the de facto president of the Senate, and the tiebreaker, Vice President Harris, will vote with her party fellow Democrats and make it 51.
Right. An important civics lesson here.
An important civics lesson, yeah. So what happens is at a certain point, President Biden will formally nominate Deb Haaland. She's been announced that she will be nominated. She has not formally been put into the queue to begin the confirmation process. Once she is submitted for nomination, the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee will hold confirmation hearings. They will collect a lot of material. They will collect questionnaires. They will review her record, and members of that committee will get to ask her questions about all sorts of elements of her record and her views. She will be asked about her opinions on public lands and oil and gas exploration on public lands, her interest in protecting federal parks, tribal interests, national monuments, and obviously Republicans will have questions about her record of support for the Green New Deal. After those hearings, the committee will have a vote. Because Democrats are in control, she will get forwarded onto the floor. Senators on the floor will have a debate, and she will very likely get confirmed. Even if every Democrat votes for her and every Republican votes against her, Kamala Harris provides that tie-breaking vote. There's obviously a scenario where you could have some Republicans voting for her. You could have some Democrats voting against her. Anything can happen between now and the time that she is confirmed, but our indication at this point is that there's no smoking gun here. What you see is what you get, and there's no expectation right now that Haaland is going to be a particularly dicey confirmation proposition, unlike someone like Neera Tanden, who's been, you know, nominated to lead the OMB and has more of a controversial record coming into this equation.
Right. Or if I may date myself, going back to the Clinton era, some of his nominees, there was one in particular, I think there were two in a row, had child care problems, i.e., well, they probably had child care problems, but the people that they had hired for their child care, they did not pay taxes on, and there were immigration issues. So it had nothing to do with their position on their particular department. It had to do with whether or not they were violating the law or something like that. The other caveat I need to point out again is we are recording this on Thursday, and anything can happen. So as we say, present tense right now, Deb Haaland has not been officially nominated, but you know, someone could make our point moot in a stroke of a pen, I would say. So does it make sense for Representative Stauber, who's a representative, to have gotten involved? He wrote the letter addressed to dear colleagues. I'm not entirely sure who he meant by colleagues. Did he mean Republicans in the Senate, or did he mean fellow reps who wouldn't have a vote, as you just said? It certainly has a right to express his opinion, but what difference does it make? Not to denigrate it, but tell us.
Yeah. you know, practically speaking, as I said, he has no say. You know, the effect of this campaign that he's launching right now could bring attention to these issues among Senate Republicans who would be sympathetic to this cause. Certainly elevating the issues that he's addressing doesn't hurt in terms of the press that Congresswoman Haaland's going to get and any sort of clipped news articles, entry of documents into the record that Senate Republicans, particularly on the Energy and Natural Resources Committee, would be reviewing in advance to prepare for her confirmation hearings. And, you know, something, a light bulb could go off there and they could ask Congresswoman Haaland a question during her hearings that provokes some sort of answer that, you know, haunts her in some way when she goes to the floor. You know, the way that what Stauber is doing would be more effective is if there were Republicans in the Minnesota delegation in the Senate, if there was a Senate Republican from Minnesota who could help elevate those cause, you know, with real effect here, meaning a no vote. Unfortunately for Congressman Stauber, he has Senators Amy Klobuchar and Tina Smith, who I would be shocked if they had the same problems that Congressman Stauber had. Congressman Stauber is talking about a very specific controversy involving mining in Northeast Minnesota, the Boundary Waters controversy. This is an issue that has split along party lines among Minnesota lawmakers in the House, where Republicans in the Minnesota delegation want the mining to continue. Democrats in the Minnesota delegation across the board want the mining to continue to be banned because of concerns about environmental ramifications.
Right, and we're talking about future mining, not what's there already.
That's right, future mining. So the point of the story is he doesn't have the megaphone that he might hope he has, realistically speaking.
Right.
To really make a difference here.
Right. We are speaking with Emma Dumain, a reporter from E&E News, the E&E standing for Energy and Environment, and Tad Johnson, a tribal attorney and a person with a very impressive title with the University of Minnesota. I will ask you, Tad, from your point of view, does it make sense for Stauber to have written this letter?
Well, the problem that the Indian tribes have is when they look at the Department of Interior, they see the Bureau of Indian Affairs. Chief Justice John Marshall said the relationship between the United States and the tribes is unlike that between any other two peoples. As a result of the big land transaction that took place in the 19th century, tribes were relegated to reservations, but the Bureau of Indian Affairs promised them, healthcare, housing, education, et cetera. And most of those trust responsibilities they promised flow through the Bureau of Indian Affairs. Now, the Interior Department's made up of a lot of things, mainly dealing with land. And Congressman Stauber and Congresswoman Holland are on the committee that oversees the Interior Department. And I actually worked for that committee. I was staff director for the subcommittee that he's on now on Indian Affairs. And anyway, in general, we worked in a very nonpartisan, bipartisan way. We got a lot of bills through back then. This is 25 plus years ago. But, things have become more partisan. But tribes look at Interior and say, this is the entity that is primarily responsible for carrying out the trust responsibilities we were promised in treaties. And so for the last 171 years, they've dealt with a non-Indian person heading up the department that is most important to their lives. This was the first time a Native American had been nominated or will eventually be nominated to head up that department. Now, we've had several people who are Native Americans heading up the Bureau of Indian Affairs itself, but the big boss is always the Secretary of Interior. And so I can't think of anything that would tick off Indian tribes more than for the first time in American history, an American Indian would be in the cabinet room with the president discussing policy. And she'd be looking at it from the perspective of a Native American. So needless to say, when the five tribes in his district got word of this, they got very ticked off. And then it went beyond that to the 35 tribes in the Midwest, the Midwest Alliance of Sovereign Tribes. They all did letters, and now there are letters pouring in from all over the United States because word got out rather rapidly. The tribes are very protective of Representative Howland. They want her to be Secretary of Interior. One mining controversy in one congressional district is basically
not their major concern, right?
No. In the back of their minds, they're like, finally, we're going to get somebody who truly understands what it is to be an American Indian. And the main human beings that the Interior Department deals with on a daily basis are American Indians. And so it's ironic that, we had to wait this long, but we waited this long to get a woman vice president. But now it's happening. And so as a tribal leader said to me, Representative Stauber just poked a bear. He awakened Indian country, and Indian country is very, very ticked off.
Now, and correct me if I'm wrong, but Indian country is not monolithic, nor is any ethnic group or a nation or entity, right? Even
correct.
In terms of mining, there are many who have relationships with extraction companies.
They do. The Navajo nation has coal mining, but they weighed in on behalf of Representative Holland, and I mean, it's very rare that the 500 plus Indian tribes in America are unified on one issue, but everybody agrees there should be a Native American heading up Interior, and there should have been a long time ago. So, I think I don't know if Stauber totally thought this through, but he has created a national issue that unites 95% at least of Indian tribes across America, and they're all for Deb Haaland.
Right, regardless of any relationship any individual tribal government may have with the mining or extraction company, including the ones here. Let me go back to you, Emma. Your job is not to be a congressional advisor, but if he wanted to make his opinion known, what would be a more efficacious way of doing it, or more politically astute way of doing it?
You know, the one thing you'll hear a lot about from Republicans is, you know, we don't play into identity politics. We don't want someone who, you know, we don't want to pick someone because she's this or he's that or would be historic in this way. We want to pick the best person for the job. And I think what someone like Stauber would say is, you know, it should not be of concern to us that she would be this historic pick, because her record is so worrisome to people who care about X, Y, and Z issues and causes. So I don't know if there would have been a better way to do it, short of him saying, I understand that she would be a meaningful appointment for a lot of people. I'm sorry, but I don't like that she's for this. I don't like that she's for that. I don't like her record on mining and the Green New Deal. I honestly don't think that there would have been a better way for him to do it. And I think that he, like many Republicans, would reject the premise that what he did was tactless or inappropriate. But I think that, you know, what we've been talking about here is this is a deeply emotional issue for her supporters and for tribal communities who've been waiting decades to see somebody represent their interests in this consequential federal agency leadership role. They were fighting for her nomination even before Biden won the election. And we saw a huge grassroots uprising from the Native communities, but also from progressive communities and left-leaning environmental communities. People wanted her badly, and it became one of the most emotional pressure campaigns of the transition team and of the incoming president for out of any of the other cabinet picks that we've seen. So I don't know if Stauber anticipated what the backlash would be for him personally and politically, but you know, he certainly should have. Whether or not he was going to do it anyway, I don't know. This certainly should not be a surprise to him.
Right. And Tad, you too are not in the business of giving advice to congressional leaders. Well, maybe you are. But what should Stauber do, or what can he do to repair the relations now?
Well, what the tribes asked him to do was to basically, you know, take back his letter and reconsider the position. And I hope he gives that some thought. But it's kind of like it's out of the bottle now. So it's kind of hard for him to do that. And exactly why he did it politically, we don't exactly know. But we do know that I've never seen tribes as excited as they were the day they announced that Haaland was getting the nomination. It was kind of like, finally, somebody who understands tribal sovereignty and who gets the what it is to live on an Indian reservation. And, you know, they were so relieved, so happy, so elated that finally one of us was going to be leading the agency that has a great deal of control over people's lives. And so it seems like exactly the right thing to do, the right political tone for President Biden to hit. Stauber, maybe if he either stays where he's at, doesn't push it additionally, or withdraws his letter, that might help him with the tribes. The ironic thing is the tribes in this district kind of like Stauber. And the first thing he did was he met with all the tribal leaders. And
you mean the first thing he did, the first thing he did upon taking office?
Shortly after taking office, yeah.
Right.
I remember we were all at the restaurant at Black Bear, and they emptied out the Fond du Lac reservation restaurant at Black Bear, and all the tribal leaders and lawyers and et cetera met with Stauber. We had a very positive meeting. He's a very nice, jovial, upbeat fella. And so we thought we were lucky because we have Betty McCollum heading up Interior Appropriations, which is important for funding Indian programs and education programs on reservations and Indian Health Service. And we also have Tina Smith, who is on the Senate Indian Affairs Committee. And now Stauber was going to be apparently active in Indian Affairs. And we thought all that was positive. But if he becomes a negative force on Indian policy, and maybe this is his only deal, but this was a very bad thing to take a position on. And it was a way to raise the ire of the five tribes in his district and the 11 tribes in Minnesota, the 35 tribes in the Midwest, and the 574 tribes in the United States. He got noticed all of a sudden, and not in a good way. The tribes have there was a senator from Washington named Slade Gorton, who was on the Indian Affairs Committee in the Senate and ran Interior Appropriations. And he did so many negative things with Indian tribes that they ended up, they backed Maria Cantwell, who's still in the Senate. I think it's been over 20 years. And so they all ponied up. They all donated to Cantwell's campaign. So, I mean, tribes, people have to look at tribes differently these days. They have both political clout and some economic clout. And so, I mean, it's not like, they're just another group in his district. There are five federally recognized tribes that are huge economic drivers in his district. So the mistake he made was not consulting. The Bureau of Indian Affairs knows to consult, but now Governor Walz knows to consult with tribes. But Congressman Stauber's main mistake, I think the question came up earlier, what could he have done? He could have called, this probably wouldn't have helped much, but at least it would have made him look a little better. He probably could have called the five tribes in his district and said, listen, I know you're not going to like this, but I'm going to take this position, not because of Native American issues, but because of these other issues. And they'd have been ticked off, and they probably would have raised just as big a brouhaha, but that would at least have been good staff work and good congressional work, but he failed to do that.
Well, in all seriousness, we do invite him to appear and to, in general, of course, to talk about the district, but certainly this issue. We've been speaking with Tad Johnson of the University of Minnesota. Tad is an enrolled member of the Boyce Fort Band of Minnesota Chippewa, and he's been a tribal attorney as well as a tribal court judge and a counsel to the Subcommittee on Native American Affairs for the U.S. House of Representatives. Thank you, Tad.
Thank you, Robin. Have a good day.
And we've also been speaking with Emma Dumain, a reporter covering Congress for E&E News. She joined us from Washington. Thank you, Emma.
Thanks for having me on.
Coming up.
These are prayers disguised as poems.
2020 is history, and local performers mark this moment in time.
Everywhere I look, everywhere I turn, is it in Peru? Is it the police? Maybe a disease.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. Daniel Oyen Lowway is one of the Twin Ports' most versatile performers. With credits as a musician, and that's his work you're hearing right now, artist, storyteller, and poet, and community organizer. And if you heard all that before, it's because I'm repeating the lines I've said exactly before when we've had him on the show. His latest production is not about him, Rather, it was a showcase of artists from around the region performing a wide variety of work called This Moment in Time. It was held online, primarily performed and produced from the Sacred Heart Music Center in Duluth two Saturdays ago, at a significant moment in time for the country and for all of us. Daniel joins me from his home in Duluth. Welcome to Simply Superior.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me again.
You're quite welcome. Well, we can't get enough of you.
Good.
So for this time, though, and you can correct me if my impression of the show is at all incorrect or anything, but when you came up with the name, did you have any suspicion that this moment in time would be so pivotal a moment in time for the nation?
Well, no, we're thinking about everything, actually. So the way we went about it is, and I think that was really what it is, was there was no other way to describe this moment than to describe this moment in time for what it is from all of our different perspectives. And since we're a collective of artists, we ran through a text message group a few themes of what we thought could be what we wanted to reflect. But everyone seemed to gravitate towards this theme because it reflects our unique perspective in this time. At the time we came up with the theme, obviously the Capitol hadn't been invaded and some of those things hadn't happened, but we're already in COVID-19. A lot of the things that we're dealing with within the structure of our system right now was already happening. And we knew that that theme would be the perfect way to sort of let our audiences know that we are all in this together and we are all reflecting on what this moment means to us. And so that's sort of how we settled on that.
Right. And the whole country, actually, the whole world, right, was looking forward to the end of 2020, thinking 2021 was going to be better, right?
right, exactly. The thing about it is there's this idea that we have to continue to hope, right? But even despite the hope, we have to be willing to know that anything could happen. And you know, 2020, 2021, 2022, 2023, at the back of our minds, we have to always know that there's a potential for things to go south. But there is also this idea that we have to ground ourselves, is despite what comes, we're going to hold firm. We can be strong. We can make it through.
Any of the particular songs or poetry offerings adding to that hope?
For me, the one of the greatest hope of even just setting the tone around the perspectives of Black women. I think over time and over history, Black women's voices have not been sort of put in the forefront or amplified. And I think just going into the new year, some of the artists did some powerful songs around Black women and just being a woman. And I thought that those pieces were quite profound because it would be nice for us to start opening up and listening to everyone's story and everyone's perspective around them. So I think those songs to me sort of set the tone for hope. It's part of the missing narrative that we've been missing for so long. So I'm hopeful for that.
This Moment in Time recently ran at the Sacred Heart Music Center. So how did you select the performers?
Dance and Creatives LLC, we position ourselves to be an agency for artists that need agents to be able to sort of help them navigate a little bit of how they put their creative work out there. We live in a space, Duluth, Minnesota, where access space is not often guaranteed for artists of color, and also just the know-how around the business world of how to navigate the value of how you put out music or where you put out music or sort of how to promote your music into the audience that you want to. We sort of see ourselves as a family of artists and creatives who are sort of helping each other out.
You described Dance Sands Creative as a family, you being the Dan, your wife being the San, as in Sandra.
Right. We're the administration of Dance and Creatives LLC. But the creatives in Dance and Creatives stands for all creatives, right? Not just my wife or myself, but also with creatives like Royalty, Diana, Afrogeode, Logic in Third Person, JG the Great, and also Insang and Charles OBJ. These are all creatives that we assign to us as clients, and we are their agents.
And I notice you use their names, DJ, who is also Afrogeode, Royalty, a.k.a. Natasha Lancure. Am I breaking some rule by outing their real names?
Not really. I think they're fine with you mentioning their real names. And it's like this, right? Giving ourselves a sort of a name that is a little removed from who we are sometimes could help us create a home base, right? Like that way, if we wanted to introduce other concepts or other aspects of ourselves, it's easier to define it. You know, I used to go by the name DSP and at some point Goody Goody Master. And we talked about this in the last interview. There were pockets of identities I was trying to introduce to people, and I had to brand myself in that way to sort of get that, make that connection. And now I'm at a place in my life where I'm like, I'm okay with just Daniel Oluwase Oyinloye. At the end of the day, I'm still the Goody Goody Master. I'm still DS, but now you're going to know me more in just all of my variances.
Well, you know what? You've inspired me that in case somebody doesn't like Robin Washington, and that's perfectly fine. You know, I'm not for everybody. You can help me figure out the new Robin Hood or whatever it is.
Sounds good. We could help brand you. No problem.
All right. Tell us about Afro-Geode.
Oh, Afro-Geode is a spectacular artist, singer. She is a creative that aspires to empower, uplift. And she really is committed into creating music that uplifts all people, but most importantly, women in, you know, inclusivity for all people. And that's Afro-Geode. She's very, very clear in her message.
All right. Here's Afro-Geode doing her rendition of Demi Lovato's Anyone.
Tried to talk to my piano, I tried to talk to my guitar, talk to my imagination, confided into alcohol. I tried and tried and tried some more, told secrets till my voice was sore. It's empty conversation, cause no one hears me anymore. 100 million stories and 100 million songs. I feel stupid when I sing. Nobody's listening to me. Nobody's listening. I talk to shooting stars, but they always get it wrong. I feel stupid when I pray. Why am I praying anyway? If nobody's listening, anyone, please send me anyone. Lord, is there anyone? I need someone. Oh, anyone, please send me anyone. Lord, is there anyone? I used to crave the world's attention. I think I cried too many times. I just need some more affection. Anything to get me by. 100 million stories and 100 million songs. I feel stupid when I sing. Nobody's listening to me. Nobody's listening. I talk to shooting stars, but they always get it wrong. I feel stupid when I pray. Why am I praying anyway? If nobody's listening, anyone, please send me anyone. Lord, is there anyone? I need someone. Oh. Stories and 100 million songs. I feel stupid when I sing. Nobody's listening to me. nobody's listening.
You've just heard from Afro-Geode in a performance at This Moment in Time, which was at the Sacred Heart Music Center in Duluth, or coming from the Sacred Heart Music Center in Duluth. And since they can't do it for free, there is a spot to donate. You can find work by all the artists at dansanscreatives.org. That's D-A-N-S-A-N, creatives, all one word, .org. And we are speaking with Daniel from Dan Sands Creatives. Another one is Superior's own Royalty. Tell us about her.
Royalty is a very phenomenal artist. She has a brand called Royal Roots, which is all about sort of creating space for people, young people, community members, to be a part of nature and farming. She's a storyteller who tells you how she herself is in a vulnerable state, made life happen through trials, through battling white supremacy, through police brutality, through family. And there's a lot of the themes that come up in her music. But most importantly, she cares about people and cares about people's stories. So here's Royalty doing her thing.
I want to let y'all know that I really just let God use me, and he wrote this song through me. Yo. Royalty. I said, I pray, prayed up, yeah. They just want a slice, let me give it to them nice. Bars on this treble, they can throw me wedding rice. I'm married to the king, and I will not tell them twice that these demons really tried it, but the Lord, he gave me life. Now I'm back with the purpose. Don't act like you ain't hurting. Many people out here hurting, many people out here twerking. Get a bag and stack of chips, DNA and fingertips. And yes, do not forget that your heart, it beats the blood of a kingdom. Fight the grit, go repent, this is it. Final days, I ain't bugging for my God. I be thugging, thought I wasn't, but you jumping and you thumping. Where's the trumpets? You ain't noticed, but the spirit got you floating and anointed. Pray for your enemies, the devil ain't no kidding me. This rhythm in the world got me feeling so much energy. But don't forget, we gotta flip the script. Royal life for the kingdom, that's on God inherited. Brittle tongues, be equipped with tight lips. Cause loose lips always thinking boss ships. Now set atonement for your truth and testimony. Was living foul, still I give him all the glory. Throwing stones at glass houses, even me. Fighting demons cause I know he parted seas. Now looky, looky, can you tell me what you see? I look familiar, might have seen me on TV. I was feeling so much rage, money on the stage. Mad at every man cause my income was they phase. He sent for my soul, Lady Branch was the role. To empower every woman and show all these souls. There's power in his name, this war ain't no game. It's physical, it's mental, they will give you all the fame. When you go, you cannot claim, their power ain't the same. And yes, do not forget of a kingdom. Fight the grip, go repent, this is it. Final days, I ain't bugging for my God. I be thugging, thought I wasn't, but you jumping and you jumping. Where's the trumpets? You ain't noticed, but the spirit got you floating and anointed. Pray for your enemies, the devil ain't no kidding me. This rhythm in the world got me feeling so much energy. But don't forget, we gotta flip the script. Royal life for the kingdom, that's on God inherited. Amen.
And that was Royalty, also known as Natasha Lankur, quite well known in Superior. Logic in third person. Now, he is someone you wouldn't suspect because his other occupation is totally different. But tell us about the one person before we get to the third person. Logic?
Logic in third person is a poet. He's a man who's found a way to sort of share in very poetic ways stories that have reason, that have logic to it. And logic in third person for him is sort of, you know, bringing yourself outside of yourself to some extent, but also for copyright reason, because someone already has logic, you have to be able to distinguish yourself away from those who already have that name. So,
and actually, his logic is spelled L-O-G-I-K, so that's a bit different logic. And he is Dr. Glenn
Sinner.
Dr. Glenn Simmons, right? An immunologist, I think?
That's correct.
At Essentia, which you can't get a more serious scientific profession today than an immunologist in the light of the pandemic. So he certainly knows whereof he speaks when he speaks, whether in poetry or in a scientific realm. And let's hear a bit from him.
These are not poems, these are prayers. Not just scripted verses, but scriptures with purpose. So I believe that it's worth it to practice the precision of my prose, to perfect my prayers, to produce a poem so pure, it should please God's ears. Because it's been a while. It's been a while since God and I have had a real conversation. It's been a minute since I've been able to put my ego in a chokehold and bow myself in supplication. And so with broken body and battered spirit, I leak invocations on the parchment, attempting to deliver this message that I now find difficult to follow. Especially since that day, my heart became so full of sin that I even started finding the word of my God hard to swallow. So tonight, I'm gonna stand before you, a vessel corroded and hollow, not yet fit to set sail, but Lord knows that I was once built for battle. So I arm this warship daily with the best intentions I can muster, realizing that every time I stand on this stage could be my last. So I pray that my guardian angel's halo has yet to lose its luster. Because when you're standing on the front line during prime time, you gotta be prepared to change somebody else's life, or at least be willing to die trying. And so I write, like my life depends on the syllables I etch into the leaves, exhaling my anxieties and fears with each breath that I breathe. I am praying that this will be the poem that will leave God pleased with me, because it's been a while.
And that was an excerpt from Logic in Third Person. And back to family, your wife too is a performer.
That's right. Sandra Nacian is her name she goes by. She is a poet first, and she's going into singing, mixing music, singing with poetry, and she's sort of experimenting with this. So that's what she's been working on, and that's what she did on the stage.
Well, that sounds perfect for having her take us out of the segment. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me again.
Coming up, the regional news and review after this.
Your intelligence.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and I'm joined by Brooks Johnson of the Star Tribune's North Report team. Hello, Brooks.
Hey, Robin.
And our own Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio, Danielle Kading. Hi, Danny.
Hi, Robin.
So, Brooks, you have a story about the boundary waters and a new etiquette that's being required. Can you tell us how we should behave?
Yeah, my colleague Bob Timmons this week wrote about how the U.S. Forest Service, which manages the million-acre Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness up on the northern border of Minnesota, they're taking a harder stance on their Leave No Trace policy, and they're saying, you know, you really have to watch these educational videos before you head out to do any canoeing and camping. After last year's surge in visitors due to the pandemic and people wanting to get out naturally, caused folks to behave badly, I guess. Essentially, you know, people were cutting down live trees that they shouldn't be, sometimes just to get a better view of the lake. And they were leaving campfires unattended, and trash was being found far more often than they had in the past. So the hope is that the Forest Service is going to require these videos be viewed. People will have a grounding in the Leave No Trace policy, you know, make it look like you were never there at all, you know, tread lightly. And the hope is that, you know, the wilderness itself will be better preserved by those who visit it.
All right. Well, if you're headed there from Wisconsin, you're probably going over to Blatnik Bridge. So does that mean that you should hurry up and beat the replacement plans?
It's going to be about a decade before a new bridge is in service, it sounds like. MnDOT and WISDOT, the Minnesota and Wisconsin Transportation Departments, are just in the early stages of planning what will replace the Blatnik, which has stood for 60 years bridging the Twin Ports. It's the high bridge, of course, over the harbor, the other being the Bong Bridge. The two together are the longest bridges in Minnesota, and it handles about 33,000 cars per day. So MnDOT and WISDOT, they plan on either replacing or just overwhelmingly restoring this bridge. They don't have any cost estimates yet, but just replacing the center span would be about $400 million, according to MnDOT estimates. And Minnesota and Wisconsin will both split the cost of the work. It'd be about 2028 until construction actually starts. And one of the things that's almost definitely going to happen is a redo of how the I-535 enters into Superior. Right now, as it, you know, traffic zooms down, you know, going 55 and then right onto Hammond, where it's 30 very suddenly. That's actually the highest percentage of crashes in Superior, and one of the highest in all of Northwest Wisconsin is right along that stretch. So they're going to try to do something to fix that safety and get the bridge to stand for another 100 years and, you know, hopefully carry more vehicles into the future.
All right. Well, if we continue my geography lesson here and we go southwest from the Blatnik, we'll get to Moose Lake, where you probably won't see it, but a bit of protesting has been going on lately. Yes?
Yeah, a group of sex offenders at a northern Minnesota treatment center are refusing to attend therapy sessions, and others are wearing black clothing as a show of solidarity amid growing unrest at this Moose Lake treatment center after three men housed there died and others were sickened by COVID-19. So this was organized to call attention to what offenders see as poor infection control practices and a low rate of release from the state's treatment centers in Moose Lake and St. Peter, Moose Lake being just down the road a ways from Duluth. So far, since the start of the pandemic, about 101 staff members and 88 clients of the Minnesota Sex Offender Program have had confirmed COVID-19 infections, and at least three have died at the Moose Lake Center since early December.
Wow. Well, Danny, on the Wisconsin side, and not necessarily in such a confined environment, what's the latest COVID update?
Yeah, a couple of things. This week, the Wisconsin Department of Health Services announced that they would be expanding vaccination in Wisconsin to those 65 and older. As we've been saying all along, the pace of the vaccine rollout in Wisconsin is lagging behind neighboring states like Minnesota and Michigan. You know, for example, Michigan, I believe they began vaccinating their residents who are 65 and older, as well as police and school teachers a couple of weeks ago. And we're still waiting until next Monday before that can start to begin here in Wisconsin. Here in northern Wisconsin, we've seen around 24,000 doses of the vaccine administered in the region. You know, Douglas County has seen about 2,200 doses, and Ashland and Bayfield County are closer to 1,000. And overall, for northwestern Wisconsin, that's about just under 10% of all the vaccine that's been administered across the state as of Wednesday. So, you know, there's been a lot of frustration in rural areas with this rollout and how many doses that people are receiving. You know, there have been complications related to limited staffing and resources for health departments and providers to be able to administer the vaccine in some cases. And then also in rural Wisconsin, they're seeing hesitancy from some residents to take up the vaccine. And in fact, there was a poll that was released by the Kaiser Family Foundation that found people in rural areas are least likely to definitely get the vaccine. There's more hesitancy there. 3 in 10 people in rural areas said they would definitely get the vaccine in a recent survey. Bayfield County's health officer, Sarah Wortman, has said they know that there are going to be people who will not be an early adopter. And the Wisconsin Office of Rural Health has been recommending reaching out to community leaders and faith leaders and local officials to kind of help promote vaccination and get the word out about getting people vaccinated so that we can get to a point of herd immunity. As long as we have the supply, Robin.
Right. And I'll note that the word definitely was part of the survey, so perhaps others were not saying they weren't going to get it, but not as enthusiastic about it, if you will. Last week, you had a report about the gray wolf and its endangered status or protected status. Is there an update?
Yeah, there is. There's a lot of debate right now over how we should go about wolf management in Wisconsin now that the wolf was delisted as an endangered species earlier this month. While groups are suing to restore those protections, Republican lawmakers in Wisconsin are really pushing the Wisconsin DNR to immediately resume a wolf hunt. And today the board is actually meeting to take up the issue of whether or not a wolf hunt should immediately be resumed here in Wisconsin, which would run for the rest of January and through February. And that's happening because, as I said, Republican lawmakers and also hunting and wildlife groups have been frustrated with the fact that the DNR or state regulators have decided to put off holding a wolf hunt until this coming November. The agency has said that they need more time to develop a science-based harvest quota and gather input from tribes and other groups as they're updating the state's wolf management plan, which was last updated in 2007.
And I think we can expect quite a few more updates from you on this issue. We've been speaking with Danielle Kading, the Superior-based reporter for WPR News. Thank you, Danny.
Thank you, Robin.
And Brooks Johnson of the Star Tribune's North Report team. Thank you, Brooks.
Thanks so much, Robin.
You can read the stories by Brooks and the Star Tribune's entire Twin Ports Bureau at www.startribune.com/northreport, and be sure to subscribe to their local newsletter. And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. Earlier in the show, we heard the Twin Ports' own Afro Geode cover Demi Lovato's Anyone. So why not hear Demi Lovato herself in her cover of the late Bill Withers' Lovely Day, performed on Wednesday for the inauguration of President Biden and Vice President Harris. I'm Robin Washington. We hope you have a lovely day, and stay safe, everyone. When I wake-